You've heard me talk about my dog Tucker a lot on this podcast, and it's hard to imagine our family now without the joy that this little field spaniel has brought to our daily lives. That's when we were approached about advertising Superfood Complete on the show, and I said, well, yes, of course. Actress Katherine Heigl has helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, and she is seeing more and more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Dogs across America, just like my dog Tucker, are trying Superfood Complete and experiencing amazing health benefits. Go to BadlandsRanch.com/Zabe and order right now to get up to 50% off your regularly priced order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience these incredible things, go to BadlandsRanch.com. That's BadlandsRanch.com/Zabe today. Summer concert season is almost upon us, and if you're heading out to a country show, it'll be all about the boots. With seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring and summer, including men's and women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more, Tecovas is your stop for the best in Western style. Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink or two, and shop new styles. The smell of fresh leather and a friendly staff are at your service. Many stores even have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. And with regular live music and events, there is no in-store experience quite like it. If you can't make it into a store, just visit Tecovas.com. That's Tecovas.com. They offer free shipping on all boots, as well as free returns and exchanges, and they ship right to your door. Go to Tecovas.com and find your new favorite pair of boots today. Today on the Zabecast, Andy Poland joins me and talks about the burden of hair. Poor guy. The craziness of a spring college football season and the ineptitude of NFL coaches like Rich Kotite and David Shula. All that plus MLB takes a major proactive step towards finding a way to play this season. Your daily Kickstarter of Uncensored Zabe is locked and loaded, so buckle up and let's go!
Here we go!
Wednesday, April 15th, 2020. Thank you for joining me.
Behold, Simi, life, real life, a thing that we have been denied for far too long. Good morning, my neighbors!
Hey, fuck you!
Yes! Yes! Fuck you, too!
Ah, yes, indeed. Day 35 of the No Sports Mageddon Apocalypse, and as Scott Van Pelt says, I'm not tired yet. I got things I want to talk about.
Been running for Jesus a long time.
I'm not tired yet.
Been working for Jesus a long time.
I'm not tired yet.
Been working for Jesus a long time.
I'm not tired yet.
Hard not to get pumped up hearing that, right? Of course. Get it done, everybody. Gotta get it done.
What's more? Gotta get it done.
Exactly right. I wish there was better news on Tuesday. Tuesday dumped a lot of news in the sports world. The Chinese Basketball Association was hoping to get started again in late April, and they have now punted back to July. Problems include American players that are on each roster that had to quarantine for 14 days. They've been called back to China to start, and now this has been punted way back. The Tour de France, which, as you know, I am meh minus at best on, even though I understand how amazing these athletes are, has been postponed, not canceled yet, but postponed, so that's bad. And the University of Cincinnati has canceled or has shut down men's soccer, which they say is part of not necessarily the upcoming expectation of a budgetary shortfall due to the pandemic, but some had said that there was going to be cuts anyway. There is going to be a lot of programs in sports that do not make it. And then there's this. According to Governor Gavin Newsom of California, when asked about the upcoming summer holidays in the next school year, he said, quote, "The prospect of mass gatherings is negligible at best until we get herd immunity and get to a vaccine, quote unquote. Well, people quickly pointed out, well, those two are, you can't get to herd in lockdowns. And at some point, every country is going to have to make a decision, almost like running out into a 8-lane freeway of fast moving cars. It's not going to be an easy decision to make. I have read enough about until we get a vaccine to realize that many people who say this on Twitter don't really know what we're looking at in terms of the probability, the timeline involved, and the prospect of just staying locked down, semi-locked down, separated for 18 months waiting for this thing to come. The more I've read about vaccines, the less optimistic about that approach I have been. Not saying we shouldn't try for one. Not saying I'm not hoping for one. But this whole, oh, we'll get a vaccine. Oh, what, then everything's solved all of a sudden? And again, how are you going to make people get vaccines? I don't want to get too far into it. But clearly, the governor of California is taking a very strong, sit-tight stance. I don't know how much longer it can last. I don't know how much longer it'll last for other states. And there is a definite political divide that is apparent between Republican governors and Democrat governors, and that's a reality. That said, this is interesting. Major League Baseball is going to participate in the largest study involving coronavirus antibodies to hopefully give researchers a better sense of just how widespread the disease is in major metropolitan areas across the U.S. MLB is going to participate with up to 10,000 people, staffers, players, you name it. And they are going to work in conjunction with Stanford University, USC, and the Sports Medicine Research and Testing Laboratory, SMRTL. SMRTL. They'll use test kits that draw blood via pinprick and offer results within 10 minutes. It'll detect the prevalence of IgM, an antibody produced relatively early in those who have been infected with COVID-19, and IgG, a second form that doctors said lasts longer after an infection happens. A positive test would confirm a person did in fact contract coronavirus, even if he or she was asymptomatic. Doctors caution, though, this data being gathered is not expected to hasten the game's return. Well, you don't know. If somehow the numbers come back and show a substantial amount of COVID-19 present, then that will set in motion its own sort of logic and conclusions and everything else. It may end up hastening the game's return, but it's not an explicit like, oh, hurry up, let's go get these tests. And then if we find out that X percent have already gotten the coronavirus, we're good to play. It's not that simple, but this is good. The study says Dr. J. Bhattacharya, professor of medicine at Stanford University, will assess the data gathered this week and write a peer-reviewed paper he hopes to publish as early as next week. This will be the very first of those. Why MLB versus other employers, he asked. I've reached out to others, but MLB by far moved the fastest. Yeah, see, because they, like every league, like every university, like every athletic department, are coming around to this is going to be an extinction level event if you just lay there and say, well, we'll wait and see. You got to do whatever you can to help at least move things along in whatever direction they may go. So I'm not surprised. Baseball said, sure, test us. Let's see. Let's get some data on this. They said baseball has been enormously cooperative and flexible. We're trying to set up a scientific study that would normally take years, and it's going to be done in a matter of weeks. Good job on that. We'll see what it says. Now, of course, I'm bracing for very disheartening news. And that would be that, oh, yeah, we tested 10,000 major league employees and ballplayers, barely 1%. If that's the case, a gulp. All right, let's see what Andy Polin is up to tonight as he is doing his best.
Hello.
Hello. Did you know that sale of hair clippers jumped 166% last week? You can't get them on eBay. You can't get them on Amazon. And the prices for those that are there are triple. How's your hair holding up, Andy, in what has to be the longest stretch you've gone without getting it cut?
Well, as a matter of fact, I got it cut right before the shutdown. So
really?
Based on your
instincts? Like, hey, man, things are about to get crazy. I better get this cut. Or was it just due? Was it just luck?
It was due. Yeah, it was that time. I usually get it cut about once a month. And, yeah, so I was okay.
And how is it now?
It's a little long. from what I'm hearing, barbershops aren't going to be opening anytime soon. So I may have the longest hair I've had since junior high.
How do you feel about it? I, as somebody with no hair, I'm curious about this. And by the way, I've got no sympathy for people complaining about, oh, I need a haircut. Fuck you. The 1% hair club. Screw off. But if you end up with a big mop of hair for the first time since high school, how are you going to feel about it?
I probably won't be too happy about it, but I'll deal with it. You know, as you say, there are worse fates, right?
There are worse fates, and you just got to roll with it. But everyone likes their grooming the way they like it. You've had hair fairly short, almost like Matt Lauer. Not quite that short, but close. What's your preferred length?
About what it is now, maybe like 3 weeks after a haircut. I like it above the ears. I have a beard now, so the sideburn action is a little bit different than it used to be.
Right.
But, I'm not real picky about hair, to be honest.
Okay. Well, you got it. Mm. So I'd say get a wild mane going and take pictures.
Yeah, that's great. I look like the dude what's the bowling movie? Come on.
Big Lebowski?
Whatever. Big Lebowski, yeah.
How can you say that bowling movie? You claim it's your favorite movie of all time.
Amongst your favorites. Bowling movie. Yeah, my favorite bowling movie. It's not my favorite movie.
Wait a minute. There's Kingpin. There's Big Lebowski. What other bowling movies are there?
Right. That's it.
That's the two.
of the two, that's the one I choose.
Okay. So as we are hurtling into the depths of 34 days and counting with no end in sight of no sports, does it feel like, wow, this is what it's like to not be a sports fan at all?
Yeah, I had my friend Warren, the non-sports fan friend Warren on. I think I told you that he has said he's got the cleanest garage. I haven't gotten around to doing that.
That was weeks ago, by the way.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I knew, you know, we were in for this for a while. I had wondered what that was like. The thing about being a non-sports fan is you don't miss it. Being a sports fan,
you miss it dearly.
Yeah, you miss it more and more. And like Sunday night, oh, good, the horse competition. But it was sadly disappointing. I didn't like it at all.
Right.
So, I'm waiting for real sports to begin.
What does your son Jeremy say about this?
Well, he's not happy about it. He's at least somewhat occupied. He's home and he's teaching classes online and having meetings with students online and so forth. So it's not completely barren for him.
But he loves sports though. Like especially basketball.
And I'll tell you something. I don't go out of my way to watch these, but I have come home. And I saw him watching the 1988 NBA All-Star Game. And I couldn't believe the quality of players in this. My God. Larry Bird's still playing. Magic Johnson is still playing. Michael Jordan is still playing. You've even got guys like Moses Malone still on the
wasn't
court.
Dr. J still in the league by about 87, 88 or no?
87 was his last year.
Okay.
So he was out of the league by then. But these were, these were the prime years of Bird, Magic, plus the entrance of Jordan, who was 3 years away from winning a title. Patrick Ewing. I mean, one star, Karl Malone. And I was thinking, man, the NBA was so great. Now, maybe it is now. I just don't pay attention to it as much as I used to. But that's the kind of cool thing when you can look at that. But as far as watching a whole game, I don't know if I could, really. Tonight is the seventh game of the World Series from this past year, and I'm a big Nats fan. I'll maybe catch a little bit of it.
Maybe, so, right, because it's hard to convince yourself. Just like, did you watch much of Tigers win on Sunday?
I heard that was good, and I heard the interplay between Nance and Tiger was really good.
It was okay. I don't find Tiger as compelling as maybe some people think. I thought Tiger showed a bit of himself that was unique, but you know, the whole I think we're all trying to, as sports fans, mind fuck ourselves into believing watching old vintage stuff is really cool. And we know it's not the truth. And we know that we're hurting right now for the thing we love, because being a sports fan is being part of a club. It's being speaking a common language. And it's also something that helps give you something to look forward to. Oh, there's a cool game on tonight, or there's a tournament on Sunday. I can't wait to see it, you know? This is what which blows my mind about the non-sports fans that float through life untethered to the normal calendar of big events like we do. So weird.
No question. And we, you know, we missed the Final Four weekend last week. We missed Masters. Baseball should be underway. And the big thing about sports is when you tune it in, you don't know how it's going to end.
Right.
Whereas it's a known ending when you see a movie. You may not know the ending, but the ending is already set before you walked in the theater. And the anticipation of what's going to happen, and, you know, crazy things like, you know, for golf, John Vandeveld, when you tune it in and go, oh, this no name is up by 6 strokes, he's going to win, and oh my God, you know. So that's what's missing, the unknown when you turn it on.
What do you make of all these cockamamie ideas? And I do say cockamamie with all due respect. On shortened seasons, modified seasons, it's almost like one crazier idea comes out after the next. The latest is a college football season that would run from February to May. This to me sounds like the biggest no fucking way in the world.
It sounds to me like these athletic directors are bound and determined to ram this thing through because of how much money comes in, and the hell with the following football season. You're going to crown a national champion in June and then start a season again in late August? Are you really going to do that? Maybe you can. I don't know. How about
the fact you'd have to start in some northern cities, Ann Arbor, Michigan, Madison, Wisconsin, Minneapolis, St. Paul, and others, in February? Yay, come on out to the first game and freeze your nuts off.
Are we sure we're going to have fans?
That's another thing.
If we're not going to have fans, then play it all in indoor stadiums. Play all the SEC games in New Orleans. Play the games in Texas, in Houston, which has a dome. And you can line them up throughout the day, especially if it's artificial turf, that you can play three games. And because it was just going to be a television product, do that. But, yeah, if you want the student body, which I don't know how you're going to do that, but maybe you can, and you can get 100,000 people at the University of Michigan to watch a football game when we're supposed to have social distancing, I don't know. But I think the money is so great that they're going to find a way to put games on television. And here's something else that's floating around. I saw it on USA Today. This also might be the year they go to 8 for the college football playoff.
Oh, that's
– get more games.
Not just 8, but maybe 12 or 16. Like they're saying, you know how the old saying in politics is, never let a crisis go to waste. Crisis times are a great time to ram shit through. When people are off balance, not looking, not prepared to counter it, like, wait, do we really want to do this? So I could easily see that happening. And the same thing with these baseball plans of splitting up Cactus League and, you know, Florida versus Arizona. At some point, as our friend Tom Lavera would say, the juice ain't worth the squeezing.
Yeah. Right. So there's that. And you also got now some pushback from players like Ryan Zimmerman who go, well, wait a minute, I'm not going to see my newborn child
for four months
after it's born. Yeah.
Right. I'm not going off to war here. I'm going off to play baseball.
Yeah. Yeah. So, they may say, okay, well, we'll use, you know, AAA players if you don't want to play. And then some of the major leaguers are going to want to play. And, it's not going to be a real baseball season. It's going to be baseball on television.
Right.
And for those who are still stuck at home, they'll have something to watch.
And I now realize, after saying this on a previous visit with you, I pretty much endorsed all the crazy-ass ideas that were presented a week ago. So, once again, I've lost the compass of my own fucking opinions in the middle of this interminable pandemic. We'll just have to see what next week brings. Meanwhile, in other news, Good old Medium Stein, poor Medium Stein, Hank Steinbrenner, passes away at 63 years old today, not due to COVID-19, but another illness that family didn't really elaborate on that I guess he's been battling for some time. He was a guy that, according to some reports I read, Yankee fans would have loved him if he could have been gotten to known, if they had known him better. Because, in other words, he only ran the team for 10 years because Big Stein died in 2010. And for maybe the last several of those years, he was battling this illness, not as visible. But your thoughts on the Steinbrenner dynasty with the New York Yankees?
Well, the incredible thing about when he bought the team, he was a shipbuilder from Tampa. Now, he had had some experience in sports before. He owned something prior to the ABA, an alternate basketball professional league. And he, I believe, hired the first black head coach. That's why our friend John Thompson has always liked Steinbrenner. He hired a guy by the name of, I think it was McClendon, who to coach his Cleveland team. And the Yankees had been purchased by CBS sometime in the 1960s for $13 million. Steinbrenner bought him for $10 million.
The Yankees?
And, yes, look it up. $10 million to buy the Yankees.
What year?
1973.
Holy shit.
At his opening news conference, he gave it the old, I'm based in Tampa. I run a shipbuilding company. I'm not going to be a hands-on owner. Come on now.
And, right.
Before long, he was in head first. And, he really, changed the game. I mean, he didn't sign the first free agent, but he got the ball rolling. And he had actually made a deal with the A's to get some of their stars as free agency was coming in, and Charlie Finley knew he wasn't going to pay him. And the deal was voided by then Commissioner Bowie Kuhn because he thought it was going to ruin the A's, which they ultimately did anyway when they lost all these players through free agency. But Steinbrenner getting Reggie Jackson was a real game changer for sports. And though they hated each other, and though he hated Billy Martin, his manager, the fireworks that was created by that, I mean, baseball in the late 1970s with the Dodgers and the Yankees playing back-to-back years, that was some incredible stuff.
Yeah. Rest in peace, Hank Steinbrenner. And you're right, George was one of the all-time character owners, just crazy character owners in sports history.
Yeah, yeah. He was banned. One of the great stories was Dave Winfield.
Yeah.
Who he hated and signed a contract that Steinbrenner got the wool pulled over his eyes because it had an escalator clause for inflation. So it was a lot more money than he signed, and he wanted to get dirt on him. He hired a radio stringer, a guy who went to games and gave radio reports named Howie Spira to dig up dirt on Winfield. And that's what got Steinbrenner banned from baseball for about 3 years, which proved to be a great thing for the Yankees because instead of trading guys like Jeter and Mariano Rivera for prospects, they held on to them and for big names. They were prospects for big names. They held on to them and became great stars.
Bought the team for $10 million. It's almost like nobody in 1973 thought, are they going to make more New York Yankees franchises? No. So maybe this thing is going to appreciate quite nicely as the years go on.
Yeah, I don't think anybody could have imagined the television money either. I think that was a big part of it. And
even in 73, the New York Yankees were an American institution, an icon.
Yeah, they were. Yeah.
So you'd think, how bad could I do if I bought the Yankees? They're not making another New York Yankees, and they're not going to install it 10 miles down the road. This is a crown jewel to own. Same thing for the Cowboys when Jerry Jones bought them. I mean, he bought them for a tiny amount of money compared to what they're worth now.
But it was an amount of money where Donald Trump said he was crazy to pay that much. I think it was $139 million.
That is true. That is true. All right. I got five random things here. I'm going to start a five random things series. It's not necessarily the five most, just five I can think of in certain categories, and there may be others that I leave out, and people can email me and text me and say, you forgot about this guy. The five random huge disaster coaches in the NFL. Where would you like to begin? You start.
Okay, well, I have one that I gave you in a text, and he's forgotten because it happened in the early 70s, named Bill Peterson.
Okay.
And he was quite a good college coach, and among the coaches he had on his staff at Florida State was Joe Gibbs, Bill Parcells, coach for him, Bobby Ross, coach for him down the line. Quite a successful high school and college coach. He goes to Rice in 1971, apparently does well enough at Rice, that the Houston Oilers hire him for 1972. He goes 1-13 in 1972, 0-5 in 1973, and they fired him. Among the moves he made was a kicker by the name of Mark Moseley, who had actually made a game-winning kick in a game, and a couple of days later, Moseley showed up for practice, and Peterson said, I'm going to have to cut you loose. He said, why? He said, well, I had a dream that you missed the kick. And And
he cut Moseley because of a dream.
Yes. He cut him because of a dream. And he made other ridiculous moves, which is why he has the lowest winning percentage of any coach post-merger, 1-18 in NFL, although better in college. So that's got to take the cake as the worst coach ever. We lived through the Zorn era, including a year of doing his radio show.
Jim Zorn is an all-timer, not only in how he was hired after a 33-day fruitless search for Jim Spagnuolo, right? Bob Spagnuolo, whoever Spagnuolo was for the Giants. He was the D coordinator coming off a Super Bowl win, an upset of the Patriots, and they went to the end of the line, tried to get him, and he said no in about 5 minutes, and then Dan Snyder turned around and was like, well, who do we got? Zorn was hired as OC, so give him the job.
Yeah, but that's a weird thing, too, that he got the job as offensive coordinator before they hired a head coach.
That tells you right there it was a bad hire. Because you didn't think he was head.
Said he wanted him.
Right. Yeah, right. Because you didn't think he was head coach worthy, but then you were left with nothing at the end of January, and it was embarrassing. And so you're like, quick, just give him the job. And he turned out to be bad in so many ways, and he had no power. And of course, Snyder usurped that authority at the first chance he could get. But the swinging gate play will forever live in infamy as Jim Zorn's ineptitude.
No question. Did it twice, too. Which was remarkable.
How about one Rich Kotite, who got not one but two jobs, one with the Eagles and another one with the Jets? How did a guy like Rich Kotite, who sucked so bad, get two gigs?
He was bad with the Eagles, not historically bad, but he was hired by the Jets by Leon Hess was the owner. Who was in his 80s, and he said, I'm in my 80s, I want to win now. And Kotite was very combative with the media and very, very chippy. And I think his last year he went 1-15, right?
Yeah.
That's when Bill Parcells came in and did well with the Jets, but didn't quite get him to the Super Bowl.
Eric Mangini with the Browns was also a disaster. Because he came from the Patriots, and he was going to be Bill Belichick Jr., Jimmy Hardass, and try to instill this culture, and it just didn't take with the franchise.
Yeah, that was bad. There was the Redskins had a coach by the name of Otto Graham, who once said he would rather lose a game, I think, 48-45, then win 7-3.
Oh my God!
Yeah,
wow.
He was Spurrier-ish before Spurrier,
right?
And Spurrier was we had some good times laughing about him, but the reality is with Danny Werfel, he did go 7-9.
That is amazing. Remember David Shula, the son of legend Don Shula with the Bengals? He was the first. Yep. Hire by new owner Mike Brown. He had just fired Sam Weish. Shula never had a winning year in five seasons, was fired after a 1-6 start, and was never in football again, was running steakhouses after that.
That's David Shula. The Mike Shula is still in coaching.
Oh, I'm sorry. Did I say Mike Shula? I meant to say David Shula. Yes.
David Shula, son of.
Right. Yes.
And just because he had played a year in the NFL, actually, so he had a little bit of playing experience, but certainly not head coach worthy, much better apparently running steakhouses. Mike Shula remember, he got a job at Alabama. If you can't win, you know, have a winning season in Alabama, which I don't think you had, you'd be very good. But he replaced the guy. Remember the guy who had the job, and I don't think he ever coached a game, but there was a Sports Illustrated story about him having affairs and yelling "Roll Tide" in the bedroom. And
oh, like yeah. That was Mike Price.
Was it Mike Price?
Okay. I believe it was Mike Price, yeah. He never coached a game at Alabama because of the controversy. Remember Rod Marinelli of the Lions? Not only went 10-38, but 0-16 one year. But he looked like a football coach. Square jaw, tough talking, old school. Didn't matter.
Yeah. I remember the press conference where they hired him. He kept talking about, you got to get low. You got to get low. So he talked like a position coach. He also had his defensive coordinator was his son-in-law, who later became the Redskins' defensive coordinator. And remember, there was the Rob Parker question at a news conference after a loss. Do you wish that your daughter had married somebody different? I think that's the question.
That is a pretty brutal one right there. And then just a couple more real quick, because I did hook into this F on Sports worst NFL coaches since 1990. Kevin Gilbride, Chargers, went 6-16 over the course of 2 years. Lame Kittens for your Oakland Raiders with one of the most epic firings of all time by Al Davis. Then you had Marty Morningweg with the Lions. He went 5-27.
Yeah.
Hugh Jackson got multiple stints both in Oakland and in Cleveland. In Cleveland, he was 3-36-1, which has to be a record for worst winning percentage for the most amount of games, right?
Yeah. Yeah, well, Bill Peterson was 1-18 in half the games, basically. Yeah, so he coached twice as many games, had two more wins.
And then Jim Tom Sula with the Niners was bad. Richard Williamson with Tampa Bay in 1991 was bad. He was the former Memphis State head coach. Richie Pettibone makes the list as the one and done for our Skins, Andy, in 1993.
Yeah, there's a lot of circumstances to that. Just a tremendous defensive coordinator and a big reason, you know, second biggest reason they won all those Super Bowls as a coach, you know, working with Joe Gibbs. But he was handed an aging team that was trying to get under the cap that was coming, and Charlie Casserly gave him a boatload of nothing for free agents and, you know, just a lot of things. But he may not have been cut out to be a head coach, but boy, what a great defensive coordinator he was.
Cam Cameron with the Dolphins went 1-15 and was done in 1 year in 2007. He was one of these highly sought after, very respected offensive coordinators, put together high powered offenses both at Indiana and San Diego with the Chargers. But then when he gets to Miami, he starts shaking up everything, fired a bunch of coaches, cut numerous players, traded others, traded Wes Welker to the Patriots, and he was one and done.
Yeah, he was a North guy. He learned his quarterback coaching under North with the Redskins.
Number two, Rod Rust for the Patriots in 1990. Remember him?
Oh, yeah.
one in 15. Of course, he inherited a talent-depleted team and put forth the worst record in Patriots history. He got his lone win against the Colts, but several players on the Patriots then verbally and sexually harassed Lisa Olsen, a reporter for the Boston Herald.
Yeah.
That was not Rod Rust's fault, but it fell on him. And the number one worst coach, Andy, Bobby Petrino, 3-10 with the Atlanta Falcons. It's hard to get a cumulative record of less than 16 games. It means you were fired in your first year, except he quit. He didn't get fired.
He quit, yeah. Well, I mean, and he, look, he's had his things, including the motorcycle wreck with the girl. But he lost Michael Vick that year, right?
He did.
He wasn't Vick.
Yeah, so he was arrested for his involvement in dogfighting, and that was that. I think Petrino got a bit of a bad rap, but he's still a weasel. And there you go, 3-10. Find me another head coach with a less than 16-game, one-year record that bad. Hard to find. All right, Andy. Yeah. Keep that hair in line. We'll talk to you next week, brother. Thanks.
Stay safe, Dave.
See you, man. I'll end on two things today. Number one, Brandel Chambly tweets out a couple pictures and a note that for hundreds of years, golfers used nothing but a pinch of sand or a kicked-up tuft of turf as a tee. But in 1920, a New Jersey dentist by the name of Dr. Lowell whittled a wooden peg upon which he put his ball. The idea at the time was rebuffed by golf's traditionalists. Until he paid Hagen and Kirkwood, two pros at the time, $1,500 to use them in a 1922 exhibition. $1,500 in 1922? Wow. That'd be Walter Hagen and I don't know the Kirkwood guy's name. A Society of Golf Historians says that, I'm sorry to correct you, Brandel, but the man who really invented the tee was Dr. Grant, an African-American dentist from the city of Boston. He patented the first golf tees in 1899. It's true that Dr. Lowell made them as well and marketed the so-called ready tee, but the innovation was that of another. So kudos to Dr. Grant. I don't want to steal his thunder on that. But what's interesting is, what if they changed the rules in golf to outlaw tees? You couldn't have that big old toaster on a stick sweeping underneath the ball at 132 miles per hour, imparting the tiniest amount of backspin, causing the ball to just fly and tumble through the air and boom, 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 bounce like a trampoline for 300 plus yard drives. What if you had to use sand? I'm sure someone would develop a technique to develop a sand pile. You'd just get a giant pile of sand and pat it down, and then you got it up on the pile of sand, and you probably wouldn't make a difference. But I don't know, something to think about. I need to do a top sports inventions list for one of these days to get us through. No Sportsmageddon apocalypse. And then finally this, Dateline Australia, couple fined $1,000 for posting holiday snaps from a year ago that police thought were in violation of Australia's stay-at-home lockdown. Facebook does it again. Of course, overzealous police do it as well. They see the photos, they go to their house, boom, here's a ticket for $1,000. They had to call the newspapers to go, hey, this is bullshit, man. These were pictures from a year ago. Yay! Totalitarianism. Fun. All right, that'll do it for me today. Thank you so much for listening. Thanks for downloading. Remember to remain an apocalypse optimist that even though you know it's all going to shit, it'll end up okay in the end. Just hang in there. Thanks for downloading. Thanks for listening. Subscribe to Fridays. It's only 16 cents a day. Rate and review and do all that other good stuff as well. Have a great Wednesday, folks, and we will see you next time.